But about that same time, Environmental Defense and Save the Rouge, working together, had created a little coalition of groups that were going to tackle urban sprawl on a wider basis. It wasn't going to be just on a case-by-case basis, but we're going to look at that underpinning, the policy underpinnings of what's wrong here, how do we plan it, why do we plan the way to do, what are the failures. And then I remember, I'm pretty sure it was Burkhardt Mausberg, 2002, and we said, okay, listen, we got to get foundation money because we can't do this raising money door-to-door. We're going to tackle the policy regime or the statutory regime that permits urban sprawl. That's not sexy. I mean, you can't compete with you know, baby seals when you're fundraising on that.
They're not going to come into an open house for that in the thousands.
Yeah, no, they're not. And the advice that we got was, well, this is how you do it. And I can't remember who gave it. It must have been you. I can't remember who gave the advice first. So listen. There's these guys at the McLean Foundation.
Did it include Listen, You Chumps?
At the McLean Foundation.
What he said was, there's this guy, and he writes these letters all the time. And he's always saying, we've got to stop sprawl, we can't do these highways, we've got to stop these subdivisions off to the horizon. It makes no sense. Dr. Andrew Stewart, now you're going to enjoy this cat. He's a little bit different. He actually cares about things like green belts and urban sprawl. He's actually into this stuff. Go see him. The advice was, now listen, the McLean Foundation has a bit of a reputation for being a little bit eccentric, and if they find something they like, they'll fund it, even if it seems a little bit, you know, out there. But if you get the McLean Foundation to found something, to fund something, that means the Metcalf Foundation will probably take a pretty serious look at it. And if the Metcalf Foundation, which has a lot more sort of structure and criteria, and you know, they can run all this thing a little more formal, if the Metcalf Foundation takes it on in a big way, now you've got that patina of, you know,
respectability,
and it's clearly it's very well thought out. And
you guys sort of pick up the rubbies off the street, clean them up.
That's right. Yeah. Send them on down. To
And once you get all that, you tick those two boxes, then you're ready to walk into the Ivy Foundation, and then it's the file is plumped, and you might just
that's an interesting history
in a grand slam.
Is that well? You come on, defend yourself. Is
no,
that
no,
a reasonable characterization.
I'm sure it's totally reasonable.
Turn it over
reasonable.
To you because I remember this as clear as a bell.
Well, that's why you're a lawyer. You've got a good memory, and I've obviously had too much wine in my life to remember.
I remember the conversation about because I knew. Knew Andrew and
but not that well.
I just knew who you were, you know, and knew sort of anyway some of your cousins more. But I do remember that, and we worked. I think you and I worked fairly closely with Burkhardt on this because we had that meeting at the Metcalf Foundation office, which was sort of the launch of the Greenbelt Alliance. I do.
That was sometime after,
was later,
about 2001 or 2002, we went to McLean, and the campaign proposal was called Fighting Urban Sprawl, the Jewels and the Crown of Southern Ontario. And we were going to fight to save Boyd Park. The Milroy site was one on the list.
This is before the Green Belt.
Yeah, I think Young East Wing Yes was on the list, but we picked out about four or five legal challenges, OMB challenges, legal challenges. And we asked them to fund legal advocacy, plus a campaign to say, listen, we're fighting all these ad hoc cases, but let's also fund a campaign to change the law around, you know, let's not do it this way, let's plan better.
This is before the Oak Ridge Marine Act is passed, right?
This would be be right around that same time.
But that's why, I mean,
that was
obviously an important objective that was clearly desirable for, you know, anybody could see that was an important thing to get. So you were smart in packaging all of this around with that, you know, all these goals together. I mean, it was pretty compelling.
We walked in there and we said, okay, and I wasn't back in there saying, listen, we'll soft pedal it at these guys. Just say, listen, we'll create this kind of reform piece and, you know, leave all your advocacy and fighting for the Milroy site. There's an ancient Huron-Wendat village site up in the Rouge Park, and Glenn de Bearmaker was really hot to save this site. Little did I know that you know, Andrew's a leading archaeologist, PhD's in archaeology, so he was interested in the issue. We just thought this was just way too out there to get any attention, but I was like, I'm not backing down. Either they take it or leave it. This is the whole package. We walk in there, oh, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And they were all nodding their heads, and they're, we think this is important. So we walked out. It was, okay, thank you. We walked out, and Burkhardt said, what do you think? I said, either these guys actually liked it, or they're the world's greatest actors I've ever seen. I think we're going to fund this. And it was a watershed moment, and they went with it. And
how much money did you get out of them? Come on.
Yeah. Gosh, if I remember. $1,000?
No, it was $15,000, $25,000, something like that, for over 2 years, probably.
Yeah.
But it was the foot in the door on advocacy around land use, which we then took the Metcalf Foundation. And the Metcalf Foundation founded something, I can't remember what it was, and that was when the point when candidate McGuinty called in the Save the Rouge team and said, what do we do? So Harris has already done the Oak Ridges Moraine. What do we do as an encore? It was Glenn de Bearmaker, and it was really Reed Noss who started. So we called as a witness Dr. Reed Noss, the conservation biology, you know, he's the president of the conservation biology guru union, whatever it is, association. He came up and testified in Young East and West, and the Toronto Star published a headline saying the Pope of conservation biology to testify. And he said, listen, Southern Ontario is about to be cut to ribbons. If you don't get a comprehensive plan, you're going to find yourself, you know, cut off, and all your major ecosystems are going to cut off, and isolated and cut off. And we said, well, what do you do? He says, listen, you got to do big picture planning on the landscape, and you know that really requires a green belt like we have in Oregon, where I'm, you know, currently living. He's living in Florida and Oregon, teaching in Oregon. We said, oh, what would that look like? And he said, well, you know, you should really connect up this Niagara Escarpment, which is protected, the Oak Ridges Moraine, which you're trying to save, do it up to Algonquin Park, and then extend that down to the Adirondacks. We were all, what? That big? Yeah, that big. Those are the kind of planning terms you have to think of. We called it NOAA, Niagara, Oak Ridges, Algonquin, Adirondacks, which some people still talk about. So we went to candidate, then leader of the opposition, candidate McGuinty's office, and there was Gerald Butts and Dave Harvey, who went on to be sort of, you know, big figures in environmental policy making the McGuinty government. And they said, well, what do we do for an encore? Harris has, you know, protected the Oak Ridges Moraine. There's really nothing left to do. Oh, no, you don't understand. There's a thing called a green belt. Oh, what's a green belt? You buffer the Oak Ridges Moraine. You buffer the Niagara Escarpment. You protect the discharge zones, the most critical headwater areas, not just, you know, the recharge areas, blah, blah. Anyway, they said, okay, that's all well and good. And then we put them up to canceling the 6,600 houses that Mike Harris had put into the deal, into the mix for surrendering or having the developers surrender their claim, their threatened lawsuits. But at that point, when the green belt was either on its way or just put in place, is when a number of organizations created the Ontario Greenbelt Alliance, and we started walking foundation proposals around. But it was when we went to the Ivy Foundation and said, listen, you know, we're now together. We know what we're doing. We know what the objectives are. It's to support the Greenbelt. It's to grow the Greenbelt. It's to protect the crown jewels of the Greenbelt, like Boyd Park.
And you were there. You were there.
Yeah. I mean, there were... We're sometimes criticized for our, not the right word, it's not nepotism, but, you know, our familiarity with one another. So, Burkhardt was running Environmental Defense after David, and so I was on the board of Environmental Defense, but when I started at Ivy, I hired Burkhardt to be my program manager, and then we hired Rick, and then we had that.
So this is like the Chinese government.
Yeah.
Pull-up bureau type thing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like it.
And I still remember when I was thinking to myself, oh, good, finally I'm going to get myself off of the Environmental Defense Board. And then you and Burkhardt and Rick forced me to drink beer at the Flatiron and said, not only are you not getting off of the board, you are our new chair. And anyway, which became 7 years. However,
biblical plague type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So Burkhardt's, you know, went from Environmental Defense, where he was doing this early stuff. I'd been on their board for many years as well. He's now at Ivy. So the idea of the Greenbelt obviously was well ensconced in our minds as something that was important. So the idea was that this is only going to work if we get enough resources to make it work. And so I recall thinking too that the, as you were saying exactly, having the Metcalf Foundation's imprimatur helps distance it from the whole that Ivy and environmental defense thing too. So we had a meeting at the and were you I think were you
at there? Metcalf.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you joined the board of environmental defense by this point, hadn't you?
No, I don't think so. Rick had just started as head of environmental defense. That's the first time I met Rick.
Okay,
of
yeah.
The Metcalf.
And your brother Tim was there, and Nan I think was there, and Sandy from Metcalf, and
Martha Shuttleworth with the Nemptis Foundation was behind the scenes doing a lot of the research, even on the Greenbelt, about the need, the critical need to connect protected areas. So they did a study that was quite profound, gathering up all the municipal conservation areas, hazard lands, parklands, active open space, passive open space. So they did this map that showed all these green dots all around southern Ontario, and then it had this sort of this big question mark saying, if we don't actually link these all together, half of them are going to, you know, functionally disappear. What do we do about it? They also did the study that underpinned the Greenbelt, places to grow and the loss of agricultural land, as I recall. So the Nemptis Foundation.
Yeah, they're very important.
No, they were really important.
Providing
partner.
The information.
Not funding the advocacy so much, but talking to us.
Well, funding their own research.
Funding their own research, but they would consult us. They said, listen, like, we don't want to put out a study that's going to sit on a shelf. What are the big questions? And then we would pose the questions around, you know, the causes of urban sprawl, the effects of urban sprawl. They would research the hell out of them and come up with reports that the government would use, the Harris government would use their reports, the McGuinty government would use their, cite their reports.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I used to email Martha, you go to these speeches, and these ministers would get up and say, well, according to the Nemptis Foundation, we're going to lose 1,000 square kilometers of prime agricultural land if we don't do the Greenbelt. We'd send it back to Martha, she'd go kick at it.
Yeah, that was really important research.
And it was, but I think still to this day, it's probably one of my favorite collaborations among foundations to get something done. I think the foundations all brought not only money, but just a spirit of wanting to get something done. I mean, David, you presented at the Metcalf board room meeting, and I think, you know, did a great job of convincing people of the importance of it. There were a lot of background research that had been done. And we were all just totally, I mean, you know, you were personally passionate. We were all just like in sync, totally excited about it, and very quickly we got several hundred thousand dollars together, which really bankrolled the establishment of the Greenbelt, and it was a great, I think, just a great process, and everyone felt good about it, and everyone felt like they participated, and, and we even made, it's a bit, maybe a bit off the record, but we, because the Nemptis was doing all this great research, but our fear was that it wasn't getting out, we actually gave the Nemptis Foundation a grant to hire a communications consultant that we then worked with to help figure out how to communicate their research better. And that was, and then we coordinated, of course, with the Greenbelt Alliance and David and Rick and the Toronto Star. And so the Nemptis, when we knew some big issue was about to hit around, you know, whether it was the threat of some area not being included in the Greenbelt or some other thing where we thought the government was being too slow, we would actually have a Nemptis study released, and then this giant, remember when there's like 2 full-page star article with all the Nemptis research and the importance of it, and it actually drove Martha crazy, Martha and Tony crazy, because they thought that the media was compromising their sort of rigor, you know, because it was never reported accurately.
Well, of course the media compromises the rigor.
Well, exactly.
That's what the media does.
Yeah, exactly.
It's their job.
But at the end of the day, it was I think
positive impact.
Really positive and really important, and I think still I'm not sure that there could be a better example of foundation collaboration in Ontario than that one.
And the foundations deserve equal credit with the environmentalists for this.
Count 5 foundations in that story, I think.
Was EJLB involved or not? I can't remember.
Nemptis.
It's a good question. Nemptis.
Probably not.
Salamander, Ivy,
Metcalf
and McLean.
Yeah, Metcalf.
Yeah, that's 5. Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be.
We could go back in the records and see if there's any others, but
there could have been.
Was EJLB, maybe, but
I don't remember. Yeah.
No, probably. It's not an esoteric discussion for this reason. If you go back and you look at the Liberal platform from 2003, you'll notice that they promised a 600,000 acre greenbelt. And because of the controversy around McGinty's first few days in office,
yes.
No taxes, new tax. Promised to cancel the 6,600 houses of Marine.
Couldn't do it.
Broke his promise, and there were 5,700 units. And so the second act of Parliament of the McGinty government, first being the introduction of the Hipper-Wash Commission inquiry, was introduced the Greenbelt Act, which essentially froze development in southern Ontario. We actually expected the Greenbelt plan, which would be the map with the land use designations, we produced a few months later. But the actual Greenbelt plan, which is the regulation that made the act work, so the act and the plan, didn't actually emerge until 2005. And it wasn't until February or March. So there was at least a 15 or 16 month gap when we fought over who would be in and who would be out. And places like the Rouge River, North Leslie, Boyd Park, we actually had to fight to make it to get them in, or to change the rules on what could be included, or to, you know, fight for policies, strengthening the policies in the Greenbelt. So, for example, if you're Greenbelted, can you appeal to the Ontario Municipal Board to get out of the Greenbelt? Or who would have the final say on the Greenbelt in the provincial government, or would you turn it over to the municipalities the way Premier Davis had turned over the Parkway Belt? So there were a lot of struggles around what this 600,000-acre Greenbelt would really look like. How good were the policies and what was included? Well, lo and behold, when McGinty went out to the Courtright Center to announce the final Greenbelt plan sometime in 2005, he had been the beneficiary of a sustained public relations campaign with fighting land use battles and proving that the system was inadequate, that there were places that needed to be protected, with a first-class communications effort funded and in many respects coordinated by the Ontario Greenbelt Alliance, but by Bruce and the foundations. It was a first-class campaign. And as a result of that campaign, in my opinion, at least in part, when McGinty took to the microphone, we were expecting a 600,000-acre Greenbelt to be announced, which would be added to the 900,000 acres or so that were the Niagara Escarpment and the Oak Ridges Moraine. But somewhat to our surprise, he stood up there and announced that the new Greenbelt would be 1.8 million acres because the McGinty government was adding not 600,000 acres in the Greenbelt, but a million acres. Mm-hmm. And I think that those additional 400,000 acres was a direct result, or at least in part, of the campaign, the public relations campaign, to get voters, to get municipalities, people on side to the concept, so that not only did they meet the platform promise, but they exceeded it. And I think that was a direct result of the campaign.
Well, and again, you just wanted to see the look in your faces when he jerked you around. I'm going to tell these guys 600, I'm going to go a million. Just watch them.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to tell Tezo at school. We went in to see his brain trust. And Glenda Bearmaker,
they said,
okay, listen, here's the Greenbelt. And it's 600,000 acres. And Bear makes you listen, this is no good. You need to have, if you want this thing to really work, you need a 2 million acre Greenbelt. You need to add 2 million acres to this Greenbelt. Nobody cares about 600,000. You can't communicate that. Greenbelt, 600,000 acres. It's not sexy. It's not marketable. Make it a 2 million acre Greenbelt. And Dave Harvey and the guys around the table, oh, listen, that's not science. You can't do that. We've gone to our biologists. We've gone to our planners. 600,000 acres, just like the platform said, and it's all science. We can't touch it. That's it. Go away. And don't ask us for any more. Okay, fair enough. So we get to this gathering, and we'd had some inklings about it, of course. So we get to this gathering, and we say, oh, shit, 600,000 acres is all underpinned by this great science. And so there's a guy gets up there, he says, and I want to introduce a 1 million acre Greenbelt.
So much for science.
Sounds like Dave Harvey's sense of humor, actually.
Yeah.
Just dry.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
because if he would have conceded on the giving you a million, you would have to, you would have pressed on the 2 million or whatever. So
yeah,
he held you at 600 and over delivered.
But I think to this day, if you ask McGinty, he'll say it's probably the, his proudest accomplishment as premier.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I suspect if you asked Premier Harris, the living legacy.
Lance for life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Such a, seems so straightforward. And
yeah.
Like
yeah.
From a distance.
So. Yeah, it's true. When you're looking back on things, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, it's so obviously good. Like, there's no downside to it, really, in the long run.
But in hindsight, if we'd done a 2 million acre greenbelt, we wouldn't be having sprawl wars in Simcoe County. They wouldn't be eating the white belt in Vaughan. York Region wouldn't be mortgaging its future by borrowing money, its money against future development charges. When it's very easy to say now that looking back on it almost 10 years later, a 2 million acre green belt would have solved a lot of the urban sprawl and transportation problems that we have in southern Ontario. So it's fabulous, but if they doubled it, it would have been much exponentially more effective.